Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, it's my pleasure to welcome Robbie Kramer. He's the founder of innerconfidence.com and has been working for over a decade in the study of dating, relationships, and social skills. He's helped hundreds of men break through their obstacles and achieve rock solid inner confidence through his podcast, which by the way is called the Leverage Podcast. It's great. Online seminars and live events and on four different continents. Hey Robbie, welcome. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Jake.
Good. It's good to have you. So what is the latest and greatest in your field? You know, ever since this whole field became like a cottage industry, it sounds like a lot of guys are saying the same things. You know, what's your take just as a broad overview?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I follow a lot of the pioneers in the field. Like we were talking about Roosh, a lot of the guys who travel quite a bit and who have kind of taken things beyond just the pickup or the game or that kind of old school mentality. Mark Manson is another guy who's a very accomplished writer who used to be, you know, kind of in this industry as well that I follow.
We've had Mark on the show on a couple of my different shows, actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah, him and I used to have some blog posts we kind of shared way back in the day. But I love when you start to see social dynamics as a much bigger thing than just dating and pickup. And it's really how you live your life and how you can build your life into kind of exactly what you want. If you continually confront your fear and do the things that everyone says you can't do. And it's just amazing. And
in a lot of ways, like this sort of world, if you will, has it's got sort of two things going on at the same time. Like, you know, some of it obviously has this bad reputation for these like scummy guys that sort of misuse it or misinterpret the whole thing. But another part of it is, you know, a lot of guys that never would have been into self-improvement, never would have, I don't think, been into like reading books and going to conferences and, you know, world travel. I think it's influenced a lot of guys in a very positive way, or working out or fitness. Like a lot of these guys might have just been couch potatoes playing Xbox all day, you know?
Totally. But, well, you're speaking to one of them.
Yeah, that's an honest answer.
That was exactly kind of where I was going. I mean, not that bad. I was, I was the dude who was graduating from college, went to UC San Diego, got a, you know, partial scholarship to play golf down there. But, you know, I was just like a guy who hung out. I was, you know, 20, 30 pounds overweight. I wasn't going to be able to make it on the PGA Tour. And I'd go out to the bars in Pacific Beach and have some Long Islands. And, you know, my life was probably going to where a lot of guys go, you know, find a girl that is, you know, someone you can settle for, have some kids and work in finance. And then I stumbled across this information, and my first reaction was, wow, like you can change yourself? I didn't even think of that before.
Yeah, right. No, I know. So there's a very positive angle to it. And I don't know if that part of, you know, this like little cottage world gets enough credit, you know,
it really
but
doesn't.
I definitely noticed that, you know, with guys. So that's a good thing. But
yeah.
It gets
a lot of bad rap too, because there's a crossover for kind of like the red pill stuff, which is can be looked at as very negatively, and it can be a reaction against feminism and a lot of the things that be in our culture of this, like, you know, men need to take back their power and blah blah blah. And I don't, you know, I guess that's fine if you want to look at it like that, but the way I like to see it is, why not just improve yourself and get over your own nonsense, your own fears, and just be in relationship with awesome people. And, you know, there's going to be haters out there and women that don't see eye to eye, but there's going to be a lot more that do.
No, that's true. Good stuff. So, is it largely about the approach, you know, getting confidence to do the approach, or what is inner confidence?
Well, I see like radical improvement as two things. The first one is, you need to face your fears. You need to get over your fear of women, fear of talking to women, fear of expressing your sexuality and your desire, not just to women, but in life. You know, if you're scared to talk to a woman, you're probably scared to ask your boss for a raise at work, or you're scared to have a confrontation with you know, and life is full of confrontation. Sometimes we have to have it and we have to do it. And that was one thing that I wasn't very confident with growing up, just based on my friends and growing up pretty sheltered in Orange County with, you know, middle class family and the way I was raised. So just having any sort of confrontation or expressing what I wanted never came easy. So yeah, approaching women for me was the easiest, you know, point A to point B to get over that fear. Because, you know, who's not scared of a gorgeous woman that could, you know, just look at you in the wrong way if you're not used to getting rejected and just totally kind of, you know, to make you feel like crap. And then the second thing that's equally as important is surrounding yourself with people that bring you up. And, you know, the expression, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. And what I find is that if you can at first get past your fear and, you know, take those steps to do that, you'll quickly surround yourself with people that are kind of doing the same thing. You know, you'll get out of that lifestyle of maybe, you know, you go to the work, you come home, you see your buddies, you go to the sports bar, you have some beers, you're all 30 pounds overweight, and that's your life, right? And that's what we see a lot in in our culture. So two things: surround yourself with guys that are better than you, or, you know, surround yourself with guys that are going to bring you up, and work on your fear. That's what I kind of preach to my clients.
So a lot of it is, okay, so let's talk about working on your fear type thing. Sure. You know, the inner confidence, sort of take it directly as a subject. How do you do that? Like, everyone wants the how to answer, I guess, you know, myself included.
Yeah. Well, what I like to say is it's simple, but it's not easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it. It's simple in the sense that, you know, it doesn't really take a whole lot of creativity to consistently walk up to women and tell them, basically be direct. And there's a few different ways you can do that. You could just, you know, for me, when I first started, just running up to a girl on the sidewalk and telling her that I thought she was cute was terrifying. So and just doing that would help me get over that fear. Doing things in public that make you feel silly or obnoxious. My buddy Sasha Daygame has a lot of really awesome, like, social freedom exercises he talks about, where he'll awkwardly stare through a window in a crowded Starbucks and make faces at people. Or he'll walk into a McDonald's and ask to buy the place. Or he'll walk up to some people and ask them where he can find a certain store and start picking his nose and then attempt to shake their hand. So, you know, I would... and, you know, these things are all just silly things that you know, it's never going to matter. Like, no one's gonna punch you in the face or tell you anything bad, but our unconscious mind thinks something really bad is gonna happen when we go against social norms. So when you can confront social norms and say, screw it, I'm gonna do it anyways, you start to really experience this freedom that most people don't have. And it's not an overnight thing. This takes months, it can take years to basically get over, you know, giving an F about what people think. So what I like to do is, you know, I tell people it's a process and you just got to take it day by day, make it consistent. And within a matter of months, you'll be kind of unrecognizable from a confidence standpoint of what you felt before.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. So, a lot of this, I think, is really not about girls. It's about guys. It, like you said, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it, I mean, don't let me put words in your mouth, but, well, you know, for example, do you believe in, like, the solo game, the lone wolf thing, or do you believe that, you know, it's really important to build a social circle? You probably believe both, I assume, but speak on that topic if you would.
Yeah. Well, at first, this is what I experienced and what almost all my clients experience is at first you have your social circle and that's a comfortable situation, but it's not what you want. So when you kind of start operating differently, odds are that the people in your social circle might not react in a favorable way to that. Like, if you're constantly hanging out with guys that are all kind of doing the same thing and not really working on themselves, and all of a sudden you change, you're going to make them look in the mirror at themselves, and they might not like that. So they might tease you for doing it. When I got into the game, most of my friends would tease me, like, oh yeah, Robbie's gonna go hit on 20 girls tonight, and they would just sit there and, you know, drink their beer. And it wasn't a healthy environment. So what I eventually had to do was, yeah, kind of go out as a lone wolf or find other guys who were doing what I was doing. This is back in like 2007 in San Diego. So I found some of the local lairs, and, you know, a lot of the guys in those were quite weird, as you can imagine, but they were at least, you know, doing the same sort of things, going out, facing their fears, approaching women, doing, you know, social freedom exercises. And what I found later on was that once I kind of got away from those people that weren't into personal development or had that kind of negative, oh, you know, whatever, just be happy with your life the way it is, I found other people who were more on the same page as me, and they weren't necessarily into pickup, but they were into personal growth. I got very involved with Landmark Education and a lot of these other personal growth seminars, development companies, and I just found really awesome, authentic, genuine people, and that became my new social circle. And then as I got better with women, I found that, you know, I was able to provide a lot more value in social situations. I had a ton of friends that were girls, you know, girls that were in my life. So I'd bring them to parties and guys would notice and we would get to talking. We'd find out we had tons of similarities. They started inviting me to really cool events and vice versa. And your social circle just kind of grows exponentially. You can meet one guy who could have an insane social circle and he brings you in, and all of a sudden you're the benefactor of all of that. And that's really what actually happened with my business partner. He was just what you call a connector, and he knew a gazillion girls and a gazillion really successful guys in LA. And once we became really good friends, and the way we bonded was just through talking shop about dating and girls. And we started hanging out, and I met so many people through him that it just kind of changed the direction of my life very significantly. So yeah, at the end of the day, the odds of, you know, finding awesome people is totally dependent on your social circle, but you won't be able to build that awesome social circle if you're not building yourself to become someone valuable in that arena. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like any specific tips about building that social circle? Like, where do you go? What do you do? Where are you most likely to meet people? You know, and again, this is of both genders. Sure. Because it's about a social circle that leads you to sort of naturally be the person that's going to have more opportunities for meeting women.
Yeah, you know, my favorite sort of places to go is where fun kind of meets culture. So there's a few events throughout the year that really kind of have that culture / fun / party atmosphere, where you're likely to meet really successful people that are doing really cool things, that have a crazy, awesome social life, and obviously have enough money to be able to get there and participate in those arenas. So one of those is Art Basel, which happens down in Miami.
Miami, yeah.
Every December, you've got Burning Man. That happens every Labor Day weekend in the beginning of September. You have a lot of different really cool events in Europe, Eastern Europe. You've got what we were talking about. You've got Ultra Week over there. You have the Szeged Festival. You have Balaton Sound.
Give us like the time frame for each of these, if you would, if you know them. Like Ultra is going on literally starting next week. So that's July in Europe.
Right.
Burning Man is, you know, August, September. It's like over Labor Day weekend in Nevada.
Right.
Art Basel's in December in Miami.
Yep. You've got the Kentucky Derby, which is in May in New York. You have Coachella.
Oh, well, Kentucky Derby, isn't that in Kentucky?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, okay. The reason why I thought it was New York is because everyone from New York goes.
As the name might imply.
Yeah, that was retarded.
Okay, so that's in May. Okay. Okay, Coachella is April, probably, right?
Yeah, Coachella is April.
And that's back-to-back with Stagecoach Festival, if you're into country music, which I've been to several times. That's really fun.
Yep.
Which is, the week before or the week after.
There was a really awesome event that would happen in the beginning of January called BPM. Down in Playa del Carmen, Tulum, Mexico, but unfortunately they're canceling that moving forward because of a cartel related shooting that happened last year. But they're moving that event to Portugal in September.
Damn cartels! I tell you, they mess everything up.
Seriously. But then you have a lot of regional Burning Man events as well that happen. There's a Miami Love Burn. I can't remember exactly when that is, but that's supposedly really good.
Tell us about a regional Burning Man event. I've never heard of that. What tell us more?
Yeah, well, you know, once you're kind of integrated into the Burning Man culture, you find it, you're like, how can I go to another party after I've attended this party? Because everyone is so present, so conscious, so aware, and successful. You're like, why would I want to party with you know, I don't want to go to a Vegas club or, you know, an LA nightclub and deal with a lot of the vapid sort of personalities you'll find. So they have regional Burning Man events all over the world. They've got one in South Africa. They have one in Israel, and they space them out typically, you know, every 2 months or so. That way people within that group, you know, they always have their options, and you have very successful Globetrotters who can attend all these events. And it just brings out that crowd. And it was really eye-opening for me. Kind of last year was the year that I really started. I call it 2016 was the year of the festival for me. And prior to that, I kind of had this this silly idea, like, I'm not really a big fan of live music, and I was just really missing the whole mark.
Which you didn't mention, by the way, EDC. I'm not sure if you like that one as an option, but EDC in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never been to EDC, but a lot of my friends that have, they said it, over the last few years, it's gotten a little bit too seedy, too kind of, you know, not really their scene anymore, but I can't, you know. I have no opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Sure. Okay.
But yeah, so it's, you know, we tend to see these trends in nightlife. And one of the huge trends that happened about 3 or 4 years ago was you started seeing this huge surge in nightclubs that was really driven by promoters. And, when my partner and I, we saw this trend happening, we're like, where are all the girls at the bars? We're living in New York, and you know, we'd go to bars and there'd just be like no chicks. We're like, what's going on here? Where are all the girls? And then we started going to nightclubs and we'd see these tables of a couple dudes and 12 girls, and they're right by the entrance or right by the dance floor. And we thought, you know, something's going on here. I don't know these few guys that all of a sudden have all these girls.
It's a setup.
As a guy, you don't realize that. And you just walk in. You're like, whoa, there's a lot of cute girls here. I'm going to, spend a bunch of money or buy a table and yeah, great, I have access. But no, you don't. And it's crazy because these promoters started putting all of these girls into model houses. And you had a tiny percentage of the population controlling a huge percentage of the party scene, because every party scene is going to be pretty whack if there's not an equal ratio of men to women. And luckily, what we did, because we saw the trend, is we invested in a promoter's business, and we, you know, attained access to all of these model houses and promoter tables, and we no longer paid to go to clubs, and we just kind of hang out at those venues with those girls, and we had a great time. But, you know, it had a huge impact on nightlife in Miami, New York, L.A., not really so much Vegas, because you get so many tourists in Vegas that whole thing isn't, I think, as paramount there. But what I love is that whole culture, like, basically people caught on, and most guys are smart enough to realize, like, I'm not going to go to a club and drop $1 zillion on a bottle, because none of those girls are going to be at my table. They're all stuck at the promoter tables. So you really see this trend away from nightclubs, and you have a redistribution of people back into the bar scene, into warehouse parties, into festivals. So that's really what I've been focusing on mainly, and where I spend my time when I like to go.
Okay. So the takeaway there is nightclubs bad, festivals good.
Yeah. Festivals, right? And more of, like, you know, warehouse parties, anything that mixes art with partying and with culture, you know, that's really what I've seen.
Right. Right. But warehouse parties, I mean, you know, that's sort of city specific, right? Like you hang out a lot in New York.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's kind of a New York-y thing. I mean, is it, I don't know. Are there warehouse parties all over the country, and how do you get into that scene?
No, I'm speaking more of like the big markets, like the big party markets aside from Vegas, which Vegas is its own animal, as you know, but you know, LA, Miami, New York, those are kind of the party hotspots. And that's really what I'm speaking about here. But as you know, I prefer to to dabble in Eastern Europe and South America and other places that are totally off the, you know, out of the US, which can be a lot of fun as well.
Right, right. Which is really a, you know, in a way, I mean, and we're going to talk about that, Robbie, but in a way, like, isn't it ridiculous that guys have to make this much effort and have to be like these geopolitical daters and go halfway across the world because things are so screwed up in the U.S. in the mainstream in so many ways, you know, between this like wacky, you know, radical feminist ideology that and the obesity problem and just, I don't know, man, it's a weird time. And you know what I try to do to like ground myself? I try to watch old movies. Mm-hmm. And I try to and old TV shows like very intentionally. And I get that it's not an exact representation of the way the world was then. You know, I get it. OK, right. But it's a clue for sure. OK. And, you know, like, you know, I'm not 20 years old either. So, you know, I was there for part of it. I mean, maybe I was a kid, but, you know, mm-hmm. I was, you know, I get a sense of it. And it just the world has changed so much. And like just the concept of devices have made us also, in a way, separate from each other. We're like connected but disconnected at the same time.
Our attention is being hijacked constantly, and we don't realize it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So, well, you know, but I mean, isn't that ridiculous? Like, just make a comment on that. Like, am I right? Am I being too negative, or am I just right about it? You know, I don't know.
Well, I think you're accurate about it. You know, and the judgment you have is, I feel like it's just like, geez, I have to do all this stuff. This is ridiculous.
I mean, can I just meet the girl next door like the way that my mother and father met, you know?
Sure. Just move to Split, you know, Croatia. There's lots of them there.
Yeah. But, you know, learn another language, a whole new culture. I mean, that's just a really...
Well, the beauty is they'll speak English. They'll speak English.
But cultural, you know.
Of course. Yeah. They do. You know, sure. You know, they do exist here, I think. But our culture has made it, you know, they're quickly, that the way that it used to work is quickly dying very, very fast. It's just not going to happen anymore. As you can see, it's getting more and more difficult to live as we once did prior to feminism. And I think eventually it'll swing back in the other direction.
It always does. The pendulum is always swinging. But when it swings back, it's like a different flavor, right?
Yep.
So, and when we talk about feminism, by the way, we should define there are really three waves. There's, you know, the first wave, the second wave, and the third wave of feminism. And they all have a different flavor. And, you know, guys, if you want to research this a little bit, just go to Wikipedia and read about it. But, it's pretty weird. I mean, like Rouge, for example, you know, he had a blog post about like 27 girls that used to be cute that got all effed up, you know, when they got into radical feminism and, you know, in college. And it shows like these before and after pictures. And it's just shocking.
Yeah.
Like, and I've literally seen it happen to some of the girls I knew when I lived in Tempe, Arizona, near ASU. And, you know, I wasn't in the college scene directly, but I did start to make like these really young friends. And that was an interesting sort of stimulating time for me. I think it made me a lot younger in my thinking, and it really, it was like a great research project for millennial research. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I'm still friends with these people, and I see on Facebook how they've just like the needle has moved, and they're like radical. Just what happened to these sweet, nice girls I used to know? I mean, I see their posts on Facebook and I'm like, really?
I think our society has made it, you know, to be sweet and nice and feminine is now looked at as weak if you're a woman.
And it's not. It's
right.
Actually the stronger position, believe it or not.
Exactly. And I totally agree. It's very important to research those three stages of feminism to really understand it, because I think a lot of people will just start, you know, yelling feminism and it's so bad or it's so good, depending on what side you're on, and not really get a real historical understanding of it.
Sure. And one of the things too to really understand is that, I mean, look at, it's not all good or all bad. Okay. I'm all for equality, but I just will tell you that has hurt women. I mean, women have been really hurt by it. And, you know, they basically, like this feminist movement, you could easily argue or see the threads of how it is a conspiracy theory. I hate to say those words because people go, oh, tinfoil hat wacko. No, not really. You know, the United States was a conspiracy against Britain. Okay. So there are conspiracies. They do exist. Grow up and don't be an idiot and throw the statement out. Right. But, you know, think about it. If you are in, you know, if you want to grow the economy, right? And you want to get more business for your big corporation, right? What's the best thing to do? Well, it's to tell women to become slaves to the corporation, right? You know, feminists would argue that, oh, well, women used to be slaves to men, right? They used to be subservient to men. Well, now they're subservient to corporations. I mean, all they do is work 60 or 80 hours a week. They become extremely unhealthy. They sit at a desk all day and they're told that you should just be a mass of consumer. And if you want to lower the birth rate and create two households where there used to only be one, so people have to buy two of everything, two toasters, two coffee makers, two refrigerators, you know, this is an expansion of the economy and the corporatocracy. And feminism has done a great job of increasing business and increasing the labor pool for corporations.
Totally. Yeah. There's an interesting book I read by Alison Armstrong, who's the creator of the PACS program, and it's called The Queen's Code.
And what is the PACS program?
The PACS program is a program for women to help them essentially regain their feminine power, and it's called Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women. And she is so on point, and she does it from from the totally opposite kind of red pill sort of phenomenon of, you know, hating on the feminist movement. You know, she really explains it, and she explains how, you know, in the beginning when women kind of when the World War II wave started, when they had to go and work because all the men were gone, they started to feel this sense of, oh yeah, I like this feeling of accomplishment, this masculine sort of I'm getting things done sort of energy. And then when the men came back and they were like, well, we want our jobs back, and the women were like, well, I can do it just as good as you, if anything you can do, I can do better, that whole mentality. You had these women feeling very empowered, but what they gave up was feeling cherished and feeling like they could be provided for, because men really do want to provide for women.
Men love to do that.
It's the best thing in the world.
It's I would totally argue that that is part of the genetic or at least evolutionary programming. There's a distinction there. Totally. And you know, each gender comes to the table with certain offerings, and you know, they it's just natural.
It's our
the radical left would argue that this is some evil thing, and how dare you say that, and oh, you must be a racist, or you know, a misogynist, or it's just freaking stupid. I mean, these arguments are just dumb.
Right. Well, this is straight from the mouths of women who've experienced essentially what she calls it in the book. Is she says women who become kind of wrapped up in this is they become frog farmers, which is the opposite of turning a frog into a prince. They're turning princes into frogs by trying to be a bigger man than them. And they're basically, you know, incentivizing men to not celebrate women, to not try to support and cherish women and provide for women, and saying, well, I can do it on my own. And sure, yeah, you can do it on your own, but is that what you really want? And, you know, it's like if men have no one to cherish anymore and to provide for, what are we going to do?
I'll tell you exactly what happens. Men sit in their parents' basement and they look at porn and they play video games, and they become lesser people. And because women really can make men better.
Yep.
I mean, there's just no question about it, right? You know, they're a stabilizing peacekeeping influence. I mean, they're just good in so many ways. And you know, for women, men can provide, and God forbid, you know, that's like such a terrible thing to say that. It's ridiculous. I mean, the pendulum has just got to swing back, you know, but it might take an awful long time. It might take another generation.
Yep. And in the meantime, I'll be going where, where the people that I can, you know, where I get to be a man exist. Yeah,
right. And so that is true in non-Westernized countries where the toxic Western influence hasn't really emerged in any big way there. And where are those places? Talk to us about those places.
Central and Eastern Europe, a lot in South America, and Asia is kind of weird. I went to Asia for the first time. And it's, I don't even really know how to begin speaking about that because it's either very Asian and extremely old school and traditional and, you know, and not kind of falling into any of these categories, or it's just all tourists in a place like Koh Phi Phi, right? It's just Westerners that have basically taken over the beach there.
And I just, Robbie, I gotta just point something out to you. Yeah. This is a little mini tangent, but I saw this program. It was just pitiful. It was pathetic. Like a week ago, it was a documentary on Netflix, where basically women in Japan has gotten so messed up. And I mean, Japan is a dying country and it's dying fast because there's no birth rate.
Right.
I mean, that country is literally not going to be here in a few decades, okay? Mm-hmm. And these women, there is a wedding planner in Japan that has become quite famous for women who want to marry themselves. Now, we joke about like what Dennis Rodman did as his publicity stunt years ago, where he put on a wedding dress and married himself, right? I don't know if you remember that.
I do, yeah.
But women are marrying themselves. They're doing this whole like wedding ceremony, and basically they get a dress and they take pictures just by themselves.
Insane.
It's so weird. I mean, I feel so sorry for these people. So yeah, Asia's a different thing, and China's obviously way different than Japan, and you know, they're all, you know, and Vietnam's totally different too. But yeah, got you. Today I thought we'd talk to Robbie about a series that I actually recommended to him, and he finished binge watching it. I binge watched the whole thing too. And also talk about, you know, the world is your oyster, and talk about dating and, you know, different cultures, Eastern Europe, South America, any other places in the world he wants to talk about, and, you know, what the cultures are like and what the dating customs are, and how you can go to these places and build a social life. It is a small world nowadays. We're all connected so well. So you watch this series. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called American Playboy. And I recommended it to you, and I thought it was really interesting. You know, Hugh Hefner, love him, hate him, you know, but he was a visionary. I'm not talking about this from like, you know, the soft pornography of Playboy. I'm talking about this from a perspective of seeing many trends over the decades of how he guided that company and made it this giant global brand, and just how he saw trends that were coming that nobody else really saw at the time. What do you think about the series?
Yeah, I loved it. Thank you for the recommendation. I also binge watched it, and everything that you said, and what I really found fascinating was he was the guy that was willing to say what no one else would say. He was willing to interview the people that were taboo or who challenged kind of like the racist ideas and the sexist ideas and whichever, you know, and he's done it through almost like a century, or at least half a century. Which is just very, you know, he's just a extremely interesting individual who's been very consistent in that, as you know, willing to stand up and say the things that other people are just too kind of scared to say. And what I found really interesting about the series and just about his life is he managed to do it with a sense of class, you know, a lot more class than, you know, than a lot of people kind of give him credit for. But he created this Playboy lifestyle. You know, that wasn't obviously at the time in the 50s and 60s when it was growing, it was, you know, extremely racy and dirty, but he was always on the cutting edge without being too racy and getting shut down, although it was close a few times. But that's what I really kind of found really interesting, is he was able to do it, with just kind of walking that very fine line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting. It definitely was. Anything more about the American Playboy series? I mean, guys, you should watch it. It's pretty amazing. And he broke a lot of new ground many, many times over, as you know, and, you'll get a lot of business ideas from that. I mean, yeah. You know, as I was watching that, I was thinking, what ideas am I not thinking of for my businesses? You know, that am I not seeing right now that someone is going to see and beat me to the punch, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the key there, and I think about it too for my business, is, you know, how can we talk about some of these racy subjects that, you know, incorporate sex and dating and social skills without, you know, getting that bad rap and without kind of having it be seen as something really that is not. But because as soon as you start talking about dating or sex and you're talking about it from a man's standpoint, you're going to get a lot of pushback, and that's okay. But I think if you speak about it in a way that empowers both the sexes, you're going to get a ton of support from women as well. And you could grow communities and you could grow events and lifestyle sorts of businesses that really kind of challenge the status quo, kind of like Hugh Hefner did. I mean, what he did with Playboy was he made it okay to be him. And there's, you know, and he got to live exactly the life that he wanted to by being willing to stand up, but also by taking on a lot of that slack. But in the end of the day, you know, as you can see from the movie, he's on top.
Yeah, it definitely is. Very, very interesting stuff. Well, let's look around the globe. It is a small world, as the saying goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you travel, where do you like to go? And, you know, what are some of the ways that you can build a social life and a network and, you know, do this in different parts of the world?
Yeah, so I really started extensively traveling when I was about 35 now. So right around the age of 30, I became a minimalist or embraced minimalism. I put all my stuff in a storage unit, moved out of my apartment in Marina del Rey and cruised around Europe, rented a car with my buddy. We started in Paris and basically made a giant circle around Europe, hitting almost every country except for a few in the middle, like Switzerland.
And, how much time did you take to do that?
We spent 4 months. Uh-huh. And what I started to notice was the huge shift after we got out of the West. So once mm-hmm. we went from Germany over to Poland, and then from yep. Poland down to Hungary, and from Hungary down to Croatia, we just started having a lot more fun. We started meeting a lot more beautiful women that were really interested in what we had to say, who thought, you know, we were something special. But while we were traveling through Western Europe, it was not fun. And I admit it, like the whole point of the trip was me and a buddy, you know, guys being guys going around trying to have a Europe trip, right? Mm-hmm. And having fun. And so, you know, I'd heard things about Budapest prior to that and about Belgrade, Serbia, but I never really believed them until I got there. Mm-hmm. And what I found were women were extremely feminine. They were very polite, but also very beautiful, very intimidating, and very willing to speak their mind. So I was running around, you know, talking to women during the day, you know, just walking up and saying, hey, not to be that guy that like comes and tries to hit on you in the grocery store, but I got to be that guy. And mm-hmm. I'd either get the, oh, you know, a great, huge, warm reaction. They'd light up like a Christmas tree, or I'd get the, don't talk to me. You are ugly. Yeah. Which was so refreshing. Right. Because prior to that, I had been approaching women like crazy and trying all sorts of different, you know, indirect, direct. But I was just so confused growing up and dating in our culture, the friend zone and having all these mixed signals you'd get from girls in the U.S. And does she like me? Does she not? Wait, if I do my homework for her, will she want to make out with me? I'm so confused. But mm-hmm. over there, it's just so cut and dry. And when you can...
Oh, and over where are you talking Eastern about now? Europe. Just Eastern Europe Eastern in general? Europe.
Right.
Okay. Eastern okay. Europe. But I mean, you know, it does vary. Like you got to segment that up a little bit too, because the culture of Ukraine, for example, is different than its neighboring countries to right. some extent.
Of right? course. Yeah. Of course. I think those general kind of concepts apply where you either have the very warm reception or the very negative. It's, you know, it's skewed on each side of the spectrum there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us more.
So after spending time in those countries, And it wasn't just about the women, and it was so much about just everything was extremely cheap. And I could live over there for basically a third of the cost of living in a major metropolitan U.S. city, or living in a city that in Europe where the euro was the main currency, where I was like, wait, why would I go back where
like, where you're treated like crap?
I have to spend more money. And, you know, why would I do that? That seems crazy. So I'm like, I think I'll stay for a while. So I made it a point. Every year thereafter to spend more and more time in those areas of the world. And it gets a little cold there, granted, you know, if you stay there in the winter. Yeah. But since that year, I've spent almost every summer over in that part of the world. And I go back many times throughout the year. And I've set up my lifestyle in a way where I spend, you know, the nice months in New York. I'm there usually May, June, maybe October. And then between that period, I'm typically over there in Europe. And then in the winter, I'm either spending time with my family in Southern California, or I cruise down to South America, where you have a lot of the same sort of situation as I described in Eastern Europe. I haven't spent as much time down there, but I've done Brazil, I've done Bolivia, Peru, and you have a lot of the same similarities with very feminine women who, you know, want to essentially find a guy that they can cherish, and men find women that they can provide for, and it's very cheap, and it's just a different world, and it's very nice to get out of that consumerist, you know, crazy stuff we're dealing with here in the West.
Sure. Yeah, it is. It is. It's interesting. I've been to Ukraine twice, been to 81 countries now, and there is a real disease infecting the West. And it is unfortunate. It's this entitlement mentality. It's just, I don't know, man. I don't know where it's going to go, but it's problematic. You know.
Yeah. And one other thing, it's like when you're there, you know, when you're in Ukraine, or when you're in Belgrade, or when you're in Budapest, and Budapest, I feel like, has really kind of been infiltrated a lot by the West. It's no longer nearly as interesting, as cool, and as kind of a wild, wild East as a place like Belgrade or Odessa, Ukraine, or Kiev, or Minsk, or some of these other kind of northern Slavic countries. But what I found is when you're there as a Western guy and you're willing to travel there, first of all, you get a little bit more kind of respect from the women. They're like, all right, obviously he's here. Hopefully he's not just a sex tourist, and he's interested in the culture, interested in the history, which I've always been. And I have roots in Ukraine. So, you know, I found out my grandfather's, you know, whole side of his family is from Uzhgorod, which is a really like desolate city in the western Ukraine in the Carpathian mountain range. But not to get off track, what I was speaking of is when you're there, it seems like there's just way less guys. And, you know, you and I were talking about that earlier. I don't know the actual data and the, you know, the scientific facts around that. But I think one of the contributing factors is I think it's very expensive, for a lot of the men to live in the cities there and to spend money on nightlife. So they end up working more blue collar jobs kind of away from the cities. So that kind of changes the ratio in those major cities. And then maybe you have that other factor that's very hard to describe, which is you get a little bit more attention being that foreigner.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So, you have studied demographics both in the U.S. and abroad, to an extent. And, you know, I do that too. I find it to be a fascinating, fascinating science, but, are there any particular websites you like to use to look at, you know, ratios and age distributions and things like that?
I forget the name of the site. When I spoke at the 21 convention last year, I pulled some data. And if you want, I could check my sources on what those, you know, what exactly those sites were. But I think it was just from a Google search of, you know, what is a men to women ratio by age in major U.S. and European cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, good. Good stuff. So you found that. And talk to us about how to get into the social circle and how to meet people, how to meet girls. You know, what are they like? What, you know, share with our audience some of the differences people might that might surprise them and, you know, how they can be successful.
Yeah, well, if you're going to one of these places, what I think is just a lot of fun and a great way to kind of experience the culture is get on Tinder, and you can be swiping from the US with girls in Kiev. And it's crazy how many girls that you'll go on a Tinder date with, they just want to teach you everything about their culture. They love that you're interested. They want to take you around and have you eat the local food and show you their landmarks. And they have such a sense of national pride, especially I found that with Ukrainians and women from Belgrade or Serbian, mm-hmm. sorry. When I was in Belgrade. And, so that's one thing you could do right off the bat. And the other thing is, which I find just really cool and easy, is whenever you're traveling in a country that's not infested by American tourists, like a lot of these places, when you do meet an American, odds are you're going to kind of have that immediate connection right off the bat. And if he was brave enough to go over there, when everyone is saying, oh, it's dangerous, you can't go to Ukraine, there's a conflict there, you know, it's really dangerous. And not to get into that, but most of that is nonsense, especially if you're in Western Ukraine where none of that stuff is happening. Right. Odds are that person is probably going to be very interesting. He will probably have a really cool social circle. And that's exactly what I experienced the first time I went there. I met a dude named Igor, and we just talked about dating and the differences. And he used to live in the US. He's, you know, a Ukrainian born guy who went to college out there. And he was like, just so eager to show me around, introduce me to all of his girls, all of his other guy friends. So I had a better social circle within a month in Ukraine than I had within like 6 years living in LA.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah. And then the same thing happened in Belgrade. The same thing happened in Budapest. So literally, if I really want to go have fun and party, like the US cities are just not on the top of my list. First I'm going to go to Kiev, then I'm going to go to Odessa, then I'm going to go to Belgrade, then I'm going to go to Budapest in that order, then New York and LA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So would you, that would be in order, what you just called off?
Yeah.
Kiev number one, Odessa number two.
Odessa in the summer. In the summer.
Yeah, in the summer, obviously. Mm-hmm. Right. Odessa's a summer town. Yeah. And then Belgrade. So I haven't been to Belgrade. I haven't been to Yugoslavia yet.
Yeah, it's Belgrade's amazing. It's the women are obviously beautiful. Not just the women, but the men are really good looking. You know, the whole like country and not to make any sort of homosexual jokes or anything like that. Right. But it's
good genetic stock. That's
exactly,
your point.
That's my point. Sorry, I was having trouble figuring out what to say there. I'm like, that might have came off a little weird.
But actually, that's a bad thing, right? Like, if the guys are attractive, then it's just more competition. You want to go where the guys are all, just not attractive to the women there, and then you have this geo arbitrage, right?
Well, that's what makes Croatia tough. In Croatia, we found that there's a lot more competition from men, and this is such a like my experience only, but I found that the guys to be better dressed, and I found them to be more educated than most of the general dudes you would meet in Serbia, for example. Yeah. So, you know, anytime you can have that advantage, and the women are very, very educated there because there's a huge importance placed on women going to school and getting degrees. Like when you meet a girl in Belgrade or Split, Croatia or Hvar, if they're a local, it's crazy. Like, what do you do? Oh, I'm studying to be a dermatologist, or I'm a lawyer, or, you know, but they're still very feminine, which is the exact opposite of what you'll find in the West. You got a girl studying, you know, for law school, and she's just competing against all the other guys. And
yeah, right. She's really masculine.
Right. You find these gorgeous girls. You're like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a police officer and studying to be a doctor. What?
Yeah. I remember when I was in Ukraine the first time. I've been twice now. And when I was there the first time, I couldn't believe it. Here I am sitting across having tea, because they drink tea a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm having tea in the afternoon with this girl. She's 21. She goes to college. She's a dance major and a plasma engineer. And I'm like, right. And she's gorgeous. okay, like, you know, I just couldn't believe it. I thought, and that happened to me so many times where you get these girls that, and we're talking about like geopolitical issues. And I'm thinking, if I was in LA, I'd be talking to some stupid Britney Spears fan that, you know, like just a vacuous idiot. Yep. Most of the time. I mean, that's not fair. It's obviously a stereotype. So it's not, doesn't apply to everybody. There are certainly smart girls in LA, right. But you know, I mean, I was just surprised with how worldly, you know, spoke. I didn't mention she spoke four languages. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was like amazed, you know, and guys don't know this, you know, they just don't know this. They think, you know, hanging out in San Diego or LA or New York or whatever is the thing, you know, and it's just not.
It really is not.
It really is not. It boggled my mind. I couldn't believe it. You know, every time I've been to like Eastern Europe, Russia. Now, Russia was a different animal. See, Russia, the first time I went there, I've been twice. First time I went there, I met a girl in a bar named Hollywood on their famous street called Nevsky Prospect. And my pickup line was, "Do you speak English?" And that was about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a fun time there. But in Moscow, on my second trip, when I went to Moscow, the girls like did not give me the time of day. It's like, oh, you're not a Russian mafia billionaire. You know, who cares? And right. They were dressed to the nines in Moscow. These women were walking up and down the street with, you know, $1,200 shoes. And I could imagine the clothing and jewelry on their body was many, many thousands of dollars. They looked like runway models. I couldn't believe it. It was incredible. But, you know, they've all got Russian mafia billionaire boyfriends, you know.
Yeah. And it's the most expensive city in the world, right?
I don't know where it ranks now, but it's up there. You know, Seoul, South Korea is very expensive. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, London, Hong Kong, New York, you know, et cetera, but, all the usual suspects. So talk to us a little bit about, let's go back to the US for a second.
Sure.
And we were Voxing the other day, Robbie, and you were talking about how you were looking at some demographics, and you said something to me that I'd never heard before and I've never actually checked before, but you said that, the West Coast is very dude heavy. So, you know, it's just not good. Now, I lived in San Diego for a year. I love San Diego, and you're from there, obviously. And I grew up in LA as a kid and Orange County as an adult. Orange County is totally boring suburbia. It's like, don't go to Orange County.
I grew up in Huntington. It was so boring.
Oh, in Huntington. It's like the tattooed fat chicks.
Lifted trucks and tattoos. Yeah. And yeah.
It's gross. It's just gross. But like Ukraine, back to Ukraine just for a moment. I mean, the women dress so feminine and they're so demure, and it's just
they wear heels to the gym.
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally different than, you know, you pick up a date in. I remember I picked up this girl for a date in Manhattan Beach, or maybe it was Redondo Beach or something, and you know, she's wearing like flip flops, and I'm like, you look like a slob.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I don't even know you. This is the first time I met you, right? And it's just such a difference. It's amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised. Oh, what I was going to say about San Diego. San Diego, I think, has a terrible ratio. I mean, you were talking about Pacific Beach and stuff, and I lived in La Jolla in Bird Rock, kind of in between the major La Jolla and Pacific Beaches, you know. And I thought San Diego was terrible. I thought it was pathetic. Like,
really, San Diego.
Yeah, Man Diego. Yeah, I never heard that, but yes, that is true.
There's San Francisco, Man Diego, Menver. Yeah, Man Jose.
Well, Man Jose is definitely true because Silicon Valley is terrible. There's no women in Silicon Valley at all.
Right.
That's just awful. It's like 70% male or some terrible, ridiculous thing.
And most of those Silicon Valley people live in San Francisco. Yeah. And so
it's, here's one of the things I found. So and this is the theory I figured out living in Orange County so long as an adult. Orange County was a great place to make money, beautiful place, no crime, you know, virtually no crime. It's you know, Irvine, for example, always gets ranked as the safest city in America of populations over 100,000 people, right?
Yep.
And I put on my Facebook once a few years ago when I said, congratulations, Irvine wins again, the FBI's safest city in America. The only problem is, the good thing is it's so safe you'll never die. The only problem is it's so boring you may never actually live in the first place.
So, I like that.
But,
description.
That's But what do you mean? So the West Coast is dude heavy. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Well, I don't know the actual stats, right? But here's what I know. This is anecdotal. Here's what I know. You have, let's take San Diego. You have a ton of military. And if you go out to the bars in San Diego, who likes to go out to the bars? Young dudes. And what are you likely to encounter in a bar? People getting drunk, people being boisterous. And when you have young, confident dudes, they're probably going to either want to, you know, get really drunk and cause problems or fight or just like aggressively go after women. So it might not even be that the ratio is that bad, but you have a lot of guys acting out that are scaring the women away and making them feel uncomfortable to go out and having other guys feeling uncomfortable to go out with a lot of these, you know, crazy Marines. And not, I mean, I love the Marines. There's so many awesome dudes I know who are Marines.
Oh, yeah, me
but
too.
It only takes a couple to go into a bar and start a fight, and that happens so consistently, you know, in San Diego. And it's not just the Marines, it's the Navy. You know, there's such a huge military presence down there. And everyone gets so wasted down in the gas lamp that, you know, you have this, you know, extreme culture where, you know, it's very difficult to not be immediately looked at as just a drunk loser when you approach a girl.
Right, right. No, San Diego's it's terrible. I don't like San Diego. I mean, it's a beautiful place, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to move back there to make my social life better. That's for sure. So what, you know, what cities do you find in the U.S.? You had some opinions about that the other day when we were on Voxer. You know, what cities do you find in the U.S. that are better? Like if you don't want to do the international thing, because there's obviously a lot of effort you got to exert there. But, you know, people are very mobile nowadays. Yeah. Any great choices?
Well, yeah. So if you look at the cities where there's a big population for engineering, computer science, tech, right? You have San Francisco.
That's going to be male. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's going to bring in a lot of men. And even though the competition won't be very strong because you have just a lot of introverted guys who aren't very aggressive in a place like San Francisco, you do have the most expensive city in the U.S. to live is now San Francisco. But I think it beat out New York. Don't quote me on that. But I think it, just for housing wise and, you know, most of the guys in tech up there, I mean, it's more men than women. So you just have a much bigger ratio in that city of men to women. And anytime you have a ratio that's skewed in the wrong direction, especially when it comes to male, it's going to be an unfriendly environment for women. Like there's no guy that doesn't want to go hang out at a table with 14 girls. But most women, if you say, do you want to go hang out at a table with 14 guys and no girls? They'll be like, no, thanks. Cause it's just, it's unsafe. It's a feeding frenzy. It's just a bunch of, you know, competition. Yeah. So anytime a girl walks into a bar and there's more dudes, she's not going to have fun. It's just going to be annoying for her.
Yeah.
So that's what you tend to have in a lot of these places. So even though the population might not, the ratio might not be that different, you have to look at, you know, the young demographic who can afford to go out and who lives in the social areas of that city. And I feel like that's what you really, you have in San Diego, San Francisco, San Jose. I don't know about Phoenix. You'd be more the expert there. You know, LA is kind of its own animal because you have so many transient people who are here for a few months trying to make it in the industry and then fly back to, you know, wherever their hometown was from. Right. So LA is a little bit different. But some of the cities that I have really heard good things about that I've spent some time in have been cities in the South where, you know, you don't have a big tech scene. You have a lot of college kids down there. And I think they're, I don't know, don't quote me on this either, but what I thought I heard was there's more, slightly more women accepted into schools, especially down in the South. So some of these schools in like North Carolina University, Duke University, Emory, you know, you have a huge population of like young women and young guys. But if you're a guy who's a little bit older, and typically women like to date a little bit older based on that maturity gap, because women mature a little bit faster than men. Like if you're a 26 or 27 year old and you just finished school you just finished a job and you're working in San Diego or San Francisco and you don't have to necessarily be there, move to Nashville, move to Raleigh, Durham, you know, check out Knoxville. Cause I think what you can find here is that the ratio can be really in your favor. And if you're a sophisticated, interesting guy who's a little bit more worldly, your competition is going to be college guys and, you know, Billy Bob.
right, with a pickup truck.
Right.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, so does that change if you're an older guy? To talk to us about how that your choice might change there.
I really couldn't say. I mean, the other city I forgot to mention was Austin and Houston, Dallas, some of the places in Texas.
See, personally, I think Austin's terrible for women. It's technically, and by the way, I have looked at the demographics. So you've got a lot of tech there, very tech heavy place.
Definitely getting more and more tech heavy.
And it's 54% male, and that may not sound terrible. Oh, it's only 4% over the median, but it's huge. It's huge.
Oh my God, that's insane. Even 2% is insane.
It's a big deal.
You know, the only places down there that I've spent in Miami doesn't count as the South. Florida's kind of its own special place. But, you know, just if you have the option of being in San Francisco versus Nashville, I think I would take Nashville all day, every day, just in terms of a ratio perspective or, you know, just to visit. I recommend going and checking a lot of these places out and seeing how you like it. It's going to be a different culture over there. You know, but to actually like set up shop, you have to, you know, you probably have to like country music and you have to like that kind of vibe. And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying move there, but it's worth a trip.
Yeah, right. Very interesting. Good stuff.